Yeah, so what are we doing here, Kenny?
Hello and welcome to Pop Culture Classics. My name is Kenny Puckett, and with me as always is Mr. Levi Smith.
Hey.
So this is the first time you're joining us. Welcome. In this podcast, we sit down and discuss old and new pop culture, comics, games, movies, TV
Lots
shows.
Of movies this season.
Yes. And it's kind of like we're rummaging through the back issue box of a comic book shop.
Or a video store.
Or a video store. Yeah. Like walking through a Blockbuster.
As it's going to be this run.
TV shows, comics.
Lots of movies.
Yeah. We'll come up with some books and stuff.
We definitely will.
In this episode, it kind of started out talking about Wheel of Time and Why the Last Man.
Yeah. And really about Batman, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess about Batman. Yeah,
we go into quite a bit about into DC comics,
TV shows,
the movies and stuff. It's a conversation we've had many times before.
Yes.
I think the best part though is really our top five.
The top five with a D10.
This is fun. Yeah. This is a fun one.
Yeah. It was a really good one, a real fun one and a really cool, interesting conversation. So,
And incidentally though, we really didn't know we were going to do this today.
No.
So, it's a good thing and everybody should be appreciative of, Kenny's on top of itness that he's always ready to go.
Well, what it was is that Levi and I started talking about the DC shit and I was like, I don't want to have this conversation unless there's a mic in front of us. And the last couple times I've been here, I kind of said that and I was like, fuck it.
And we've kind of missed the moment. Yeah.
Missed the moment. So I said, fuck it. And threw the mics in front of us this time.
Yeah. He had to go fast too. Cause I wasn't stopped.
No, he kept having the conversation. So I just stopped answering him. So he had to kind of blather on for himself.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, so enjoy the episode. Yeah. Welcome to season two of Pop Culture Classics.
We're back. How's it going, Kitty?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Still trying to shake off a nap.
Oh, naps are fantastic.
All right.
Sorry, I had to get my agua there.
For sure.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wouldn't stop talking about cool stuff, I guess. So you had to set all this up.
Yes, I did. I'm trying to pull up the...
What were we talking about? You're talking about we're going to do a new series of podcasts.
Season two.
And something around like what, episode four? You brought up...
Wheel of Time.
Wheel of Time, which then led to...
Batman
and my lack of excitement for the new trailer.
Oh, yes.
As awesome as it may be.
See, what I think about the Batman trailer and what makes me excited is that it's finally doing the thing in the movies that they haven't done. They've done it in animated and they've done it in comics, obviously, and they've done it in a lot of stuff. It's the one thing they haven't done in a like actual movie.
Yeah.
They've done big action tentpoles, which I'm sure this is not short on action.
Yeah.
But what they're doing is that like Detective Batman.
Right.
The actual and the plot and the guy directing it. I can't think of his name.
I get you. It looks like it's going to be better story wise than a lot of a lot of stuff.
It's not the I'm Batman. I punch things.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems like what it is it's the Batman that's detective. And they're like I said, they're doing the year one story.
OK.
Which is like they're taking Long Halloween and year one and kind of just like mashing them together with this.
Gotcha.
Which are two of the,
and that's cool. Yeah. I just, you know, what I was getting at before. Yeah. You set all this up is, you know, the trailer really left me flat. And I think it has nothing to do with the trailer. I think it just more has to do with, you know, how repetitive, you know, these Batman stories and a lot of these, you know, not superhero stories in general, but the DC stuff. You know, I mean, there's a lot of questions, you know, like how much nuance you can fit into a Batman movie, you know, because, OK, so, you know, we've got Batman. It's going to be in Gotham. He's going to have a car. There's going to be, you know, one of these legacy villains that we're going to be facing, you know, so we're not really introducing anything new there. It's going to be derived from, you know, some existing stories and stuff. So there's not really a lot of stretch there. And what it's going to happen 3/4 of the time at nighttime. So, I mean, it's, you know,
What I think they're
really going to be 90% the same Batman shit we've seen over and over and over again since Tim Burton.
Yeah, I think those things are going to happen in the movie. Yeah. But what I, the new things is what's getting me excited. And the things that I've kind of just gleaned, and maybe I could be wrong, and they may not be doing the stuff that I'm thinking about, which is, I think that they're going to, they're, like I said, they're doing the kind of like detective. So it's going to be a lot more mystery driven and like him trying to figure out what's going on. And
yeah. Like if they did like a thriller suspense and it happens to be a Batman movie.
Yeah. That's,
that would be really cool.
I think that's what they're doing. And they're doing more thriller suspense than they did with Christopher Nolan's Batman.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, and the cool thing about the Bruce Wayne, and a lot of people are having, are saying that his Bruce Wayne doesn't seem like Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
And I'm totally stealing this, and I forgot who said it, but, and it kind of makes me understand and see what he's doing with Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
And what it is that it's, I think it's Emergency Awesome is the guy who shot this theory across my bow.
Yeah.
And I'm going to kind of run with it. And I actually agree with it. And I think it would be neat if they do it. It's that he hasn't figured out Bruce Wayne yet.
Gotcha.
And what I think it is, and the way he put it, is that he's not Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
He's Batman.
And learning who Bruce Wayne is.
And Bruce Wayne is the persona that he puts on.
And that, I've always loved that angle with Batman Bruce Wayne relationship, is that he's Batman.
Yeah.
And Bruce Wayne is a persona.
Is the persona that he puts on so people don't figure out that he's Batman.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's, and that's why I think that's what he's doing in this movie, is he's figuring out who Bruce Wayne is. He's not figuring out who Batman is. And they've done that story 100 times.
Yeah.
I think what he's doing is that he's Batman and he's trying to figure out who Bruce Wayne is in this story.
Very cool.
And they've gotten, the story is kind of like The Walking Dead. It takes place after every other Batman
and that's,
movie.
That's an interesting angle that might be one of the few places left to really explore with Batman, honestly, is even like the borderline mental illness.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That is a signature and a linchpin to Batman.
Yeah, I believe so.
Because you've got to be a little crazy, at least, probably more than a little.
Yeah. The one thing to kind of counter your point.
Yeah.
And I do like some of the DC stuff. But I think the guy doing the stuff, can you plug this in? The coolest stuff with DC is actually doing animated stuff.
Definitely. Yeah.
To be truthful.
And I think that there's more room for that. And I think especially like in my mind, because right now my favorite Batman is the Lego Batman.
Yeah. That's
like, I really feel like they can lean into stuff, get silly, get corny, and really ramp up and characterize these aspects of Batman that you know, open, you know, that open that scope of what Batman is.
That's one of the cool things. But I think the guy doing the best storytelling and the most interesting stuff with the DC universe in general is Greg Weisman, or I think it's the guy, he's doing Young Justice.
Okay.
They surprised everybody. They didn't say anything. They didn't build up anything. They just said, hey, we're doing Young Justice season 4. Oh yeah. And the first 2 episodes are available and the new ones are coming out Thursday.
Oh, wow.
They
just dropped it out of nowhere.
They were doing it for Fandom. They just dropped it out of nowhere.
Nice. Nice.
For the DC Fandom. And those first 3 seasons of that show, the 2 that were on Cartoon Network and then the show got canceled.
Yeah.
Were some of the most interesting and cool. He has his own, his own universe to play with. So he tells his stories how he wants to tell his stories. And they're different iterations of the characters. Yeah,
I don't think that pantheon of DC characters has as much trouble with the two-dimensionality that I was talking about as like the classics do. You know,
well,
Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, you know, these characters are so narrow, you know, that if you move them out of you know, their scope, that they kind of stop being the characters that they are.
Yeah. You know,
it's so difficult to explore with these characters because of how, you know,
that's what I like.
How static they are. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I like about that show, I guess, mainly is because those characters are not the main characters of the show.
Right. Yeah.
It's all the other people in the universe that are main characters. Those people are off, you know, Batman, Superman are doing what Batman
they're
and Superman.
They're off in their monolithic Greek god kind of doing what they do.
They're kind of there and they show up and they do what they need to do.
Yeah, Zeus and Ares and shit.
Yeah, wow. They show up and they do what they need to do and they're there to drive the story forward and things like that. But the story takes focus on all the other characters.
Right.
Like, and I think the way they've built the story and created the universe itself is very interesting and cool. The guy doing it, he did Gargoyles. So, you know, he's can tell a hell of a cool story.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not so worried about that, I suppose. But yeah, just with that, like, you know, the dichotomy there of like of DC and Marvel, you know, and how they approach things.
Yeah.
I mean, Marvel's or DC is definitely, open that up by putting quite a bit more dimension into, you know, into their newer characters and stuff.
They have
like this idea of John Kent, you know, the biological son of Clark Kent. To me, that's really interesting in a way that, so you can re-explore Superman that way.
Yeah.
Without ruining Superman, you know? And so for me, that's fantastic. You know, that opens the doorway into, you know, an experience. But also, though, at the same time is, you know, we've already kind of gotten the deconstruction of that already with Invincible. You know, Invincible is a deconstruction of that concept.
It is.
The son of Superman.
They also do in DC. They also, I don't know if you know or.
I'm not real.
I know you. The reason you're talking about what's interesting in you about is about the son of Superman. Is there's been a lot of controversy lately.
Yeah. Yeah. The controversy's brought the existence of that character.
Yeah.
To my awareness. You know? I don't give a shit about the controversy. Yeah. You know, to me, it was just like, oh, Superman's got a son.
Yeah. Yeah. It sparked an interest in you.
Yeah.
What I think is interesting is that they've done the son of Batman also. Batman biological son.
Yes, and I'm aware that he has.
Which he is has Damian Wayne. Yeah. And which is, it's interesting how they brought him into the world is that they had a thing where Ra's al Ghul wanted him to have a kid with his daughter.
Right.
He wanted an heir and he wanted a male heir to his throne and he wanted it from somebody that's worthy.
Yeah.
And he couldn't do it with his daughter because that's just disgusting.
Gross. Yeah.
And so he found, you know, the one person on the planet that's very similar to him.
For sure. Yeah.
And
Batman's kid.
Yeah.
Batman's kid seems suitable.
Well, makes sense. And the way they created the character and stuff, the way that they drugged Batman. Cause he originally said, no, I'm not going to do that. That's not what I want. And then years later, they ended up drugging him and like convincing him and
nice. They roofie him and
they
date raped.
They date raped Batman.
That sounds like a Wesley Willis song.
I date raped Batman. I knocked him to the floor. Which is a cool and interesting character. And I think some of the stuff that DC is doing is really cool and interesting. And you're right. It is new characters that they're.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the only way that they're going to be able to do it, you know, but then that leads into, I mean, the superhero genre itself. Like, I think that the survival for it really is, and Marvel started doing it just a little bit. And I think they might be getting scared to do it like in a really all the way kind of level. And that might be where one of DC's windows is where, like, with this new Batman movie, if it's a suspense thriller that happens to be a superhero movie, that happens to be a Batman movie, that would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. And doing like real cross genre kind of things with superheroes to bring them in.
I think Marvel's already doing that.
Marvel's already doing that a little bit.
No, I think they're jumping into it even more with this next round of movies.
Yeah.
Because of what they did with Doctor Strange 2.
How well some of that has worked.
Well, no, what they've done is that they hired Sam Raimi to come in and
do a horror movie. And Sam Raimi is a kind of horror director.
He really is.
Yeah.
But
it's not like getting Rob Zombie to make a Marvel movie, you know,
but he couldn't do it. And,
but Rob Zombie could do, like, if they got him in to do like Werewolf by Night or something
like that for sure
on that kind of level, then it would be like, no, really, this is just a horror movie that happens to puzzle piece in to the MCU kind of thing.
I think they're going down specifically the horror route.
Sam Raimi's always had like that dark humor in his horror that was not necessarily on purpose originally, but then he really leaned into it because he was good at it without realizing.
I think what they're doing, and it's probably the smartest way, and they're not just jumping into the pond, you know, head first and finding out what's going on. What they're doing is they're slowly walking into it. What they're setting up is that they introduced Doctor Strange, which which was not quite horror, not quite. It was still more superhero-y and less. It was
definitely like a 70s new age kind of thing. Mixed in with like a old world guru kind of deal. I love that's still one of my favorite Marvel movies.
It's fucking fantastic. And I think what they're doing, and then by adding taking Sam Raimi, that's taking another step in that horror direction. And I think what they're doing is they're going down that line, but instead of just going full force into it and they're easing people into it.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? They're like, okay, so we got our feet wet. Now we're up to our waist.
Well, and I think they're experimenting with it, you know, because I mean, Winter Soldier, you know, was a dip, you know, into like a political thriller. That happened to be, because it's an interesting movie on its own.
It is.
Know, without being a superhero movie. And then, the Doctor Strange, and, you know, we've had a little bit of a, I don't know. Well, no, because I'm associating that with Logan, you know, as far as like, you know, the kind of movie that was, you know.
That was them going, Hugh Jackman, please make another Wolverine movie, and him finally leveraging his star power.
That's not Marvel.
Yeah, that's him leveraging his star power to make that movie.
But it's got such a like Clint Eastwood-y kind of feel to it. You know, it's not quite a Western, but it's kind of like in this like No Country for Old Men kind of styling to it, you know, they get into that versus, you know, the main part of this movie is going to be everybody flying around each other in circles, you know, shooting laser beams, which I still haven't seen enough of. So you know,
me neither. But which that's the Eternals. That seems like what that's going to be.
Yeah, I want to see way more, you know.
I think the Eternals is going to be a cool and interesting movie.
Yeah.
And the way they do it. I want to know what they're going to do because of the stuff with Loki and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, this is like this massive unresolved cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Is the end of Loki. And then, all right, well, now we're going to go on with all this other stuff that we're pushing out. Nothing actually connects. We haven't seen TVA. We haven't seen Kang. We haven't seen Loki.
I think that stuff is actually going to be a big part of what's going on.
I think so, too. But through What If and through these other pieces that have come after Loki,
I think it's going to tie into
we haven't seen anything obvious. You know,
well,
because I think What If is going to matter.
I don't know if you've seen the Venom sequel yet.
No. And I haven't. But I'm slightly aware of the end credit scene. And it's Venom in the MCU, right?
Yes.
They're not bringing Spider-Man over. They're bringing Venom over.
Yes.
Which makes a logical sense to me if Sony really wants to keep their Venomverse separate.
I think they're doing it. I'm going to kind of just destroy it for you, and I apologize, but they tell you when that movie takes place compared to
the timeline
of Loki.
Okay. Oh,
like that end credit scene tells you exactly what happens and when, and that's what happens is like, they haven't officially said it, but what I believe is like at the end of Loki,
so it's like a ripple effect from Loki.
It's a ripple effect from Loki. Is that end scene?
Gotcha. Yeah.
At the end of
it. Well, What If can easily be a ripple effect of Loki.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And with the timing and everything, and even like with how it works.
Yeah.
You know, that the Watcher is watching more of these insane.
And I think that's what's going to happen at the end of Eternals.
Yeah.
Is that it's going to take place right at the end of Loki. Like, I think this next wave of movies, like Spider-Man and Doctor Strange.
They're all going to connect to Loki at the end.
End of those movies are going to be the end of Doctor Strange. And that's, or the end of, Loki, and I think,
and we're gonna do this.
I think,
hey guys, it was the multiverse.
Well, no, I think what happens is that these movies, because if you look at the original timeline of these movies,
yeah,
they were supposed to come out before the Loki show,
right? Yeah, a lot of these were. Yeah,
a lot of the stuff was supposed to all come out, and then the Loki show was gonna come out. So I think what they're doing is that they're setting the time. They're not changing the timeline. It's just they're getting released differently,
right? So they have to key them in chronologically, like how they did with Captain Marvel.
Yeah, I think
where that one's not done in a contemporary sense.
Yeah, and I think that they're and then Black Widow was one of the ones too. It
definitely
it shows you where it takes place in the timeline at the beginning of the movie and at the end of the movie. You're like, okay, this is where this happens. Yeah. And then with the Venom end credit scene, it allows you to understand where that movie takes place.
Nice.
That it's in an alternate universe, and then at the end of the movie is when it comes into the main universe.
Yeah.
And this is something I'm going to kind of ruin for you, but. They do. I heard
Venom recognizes Parker.
It does.
Yeah.
It like the symbiote. No, what I'm gonna say is that the end of the movie is one of the coolest Spider-Man books there ever was.
Yeah.
It's the one where they're on the island, where Venom and Spider-Man are on the island.
Oh, really?
They don't do that.
Yeah, I'm sure they don't do that story.
They don't do that story.
Yeah.
But they show that ending.
Yeah.
That's the end of the movie.
Okay.
Is he sitting on the beach looking
on
out?
The beach. Nice.
Yeah, and he's content. Yeah. And
do that. Oh, that the actual comic bit where Venom and Spider-Man fight on the abandoned island.
And he finds a skeleton and he takes the.
Yeah. You know,
takes his costume off.
How Spider-Man ends up pulling it off.
Yeah.
Because on the island, he just cannot deal with Venom.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing to swing off of, you know, you know, Venom knows his moves, but how they had expressed the Venom symbiote and its power set was just so heavily expanded in that, in that thing, you know, where, you know, you've got Venom basically standing on the beach, you know, essentially, or, you know, Eddie Brock, you know, without the symbiote, and it's connected to his bottom of his feet and is traveling under the sand.
Yeah. That's the thing that they do.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Which is very cool.
Oh, that's great. Cause that was,
and I wish they would have did the skull too. That was a cool thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, last Spider-Man, I knew him well.
Yeah. I killed him well.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Alas, poor Spider-Man. I killed him well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cool Macbeth thing. Yeah. So the Venom movie is really good. I really think it's really done really well.
Awesome.
It's it's a variation on the Maximum Carnage story.
For sure. Yeah. I'm pretty much being as familiar as I am with that particular era. And then from the trailer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They do make fun of, through the whole movie, what was the I can't even think of it now. What's the title of the Venom comic?
Lethal Protector.
Yeah. They make a joke about that the whole three or four times in the movie, and it's fantastic.
Nice.
I think I would, in that theater, I was the only person who got the joke because I was, every time they said it, I laughed out loud.
Yeah.
Nobody else did.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, cool. I'm really excited for some of the stuff that's coming out. I guess to kind of finish out this episode or the first episode of season two.
Yeah, we're gonna have to come up with a new episode 5 or whatever that was.
Yeah, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah,
I actually kind of wanted to do the first episode of season two. I wanted to kind of go over the Lower Decks season two because of the weird parallel that we have with our podcast and that. Cause people who listen to the podcast don't understand that we actually recorded an entire episode of the podcast, which was the very first episode of Pulp Culture Classics, this podcast.
Yeah.
And the audio, I did a terrible job and the audio sucks so bad that we couldn't release it.
Yeah, that's right.
It's kind of a lost episode. That's terrible audio. It's a great episode. It's just that it can't be released because the quality is not there. And I didn't want to release our first episode like that.
For sure.
So I kind of wanted to come back and do the first episode of season two with the review of Lower Decks
season two
of the first episode and then actually put out an episode about Lower Decks. But in true Levi and I fashion, we don't do that for the first episode. Cause that's not what happens and the world doesn't work the way I want it to work.
No, it works exactly as it's supposed to.
Yes. So yeah, we've recorded the first episode. So I'm going to kind of talk about some of the things that I'm excited for. Wheel of Time.
We're going to talk about Wheel of Time
when it comes out, obviously.
Yep.
Which is I've got
reservations. You're pretty excited.
I'm kind of excited.
I'm not mad at it. You know, there's a lot of issues people have with it. I don't have.
Yeah, I had reservations. I was like, oh, they're gonna make it. Saying it kind of the same thing with Why the Last Man that happened is that they just canceled that show after one season.
Yeah,
and if they would have done any justice, like half the justice they need to with that, that source material,
fantastic story.
It would have been a fantastic story, but obviously I haven't watched any episodes.
I've heard some talk about Why the Last Man, and we can talk about this more elaborated in another episode, about some of the challenges of making
that now
versus when it originally came out.
That's true.
And the whole concept of Why the Last Man and what that ends up actually being in a 2021 context.
Yeah. Like I said, I haven't seen it and I haven't had the want, but I absolutely love the comic.
I haven't seen it either, but I love the comic as well.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. There's Wheel of Time, the Dune movie.
Right.
Kind of was one of the things that I want to talk about on this podcast.
I'll still have to see. Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Spoiler. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
So I guess, I guess our next episode is probably going to be Lower Decks season 2. And I don't want to.
And that's exciting.
I don't want to get into that.
Yeah. Spoiler. I'm really looking forward to that.
Spoiler. I loved it. Yeah. So, and then kind of one of the other things I'm going to hopefully talk about this season is that I watched season 4 of DS9.
Yeah.
Which is really good.
It's a great season.
I know you're a huge DS9, huge Star Trek fan in general.
Yeah. DS9 is, in my opinion, the best Star Trek that they've done. I've long held that Voyager was my favorite.
Yeah.
You know, but then DS9 still better. I don't know, man. Lower Decks is damn good.
Yeah. That's another episode.
Yeah, it's definitely inching up, man. It's definitely inching up. And, you know, it's easily one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
So, thanks for joining us, I guess. This is,
this is the last...
First episode.
The end of the first episode of Pop Culture Classics.
Yes.
With Kenny Puckett and Levi Smith. We're going to upside down the intro here.
Yeah, like we always do.
Yeah.
But we are forgetting something. So I'm going to take a little pause and then we'll jump back into it because we have to find something.
We got
to
roll it.
But I hit the record button has been pressed. All right. So our favorite.
Yeah. Here's our fully prepared and ready to go top 5 with a D10.
I was going to say our favorite segment of the podcast.
That's how you say it? Yes, yes.
Top 5 with a D10.
Yeah, it is our favorite too. this is in a way self-generating content.
Yes. We're going to roll a D10 and we have a list of 10 items and then we're going to make a top 5 list with those D10.
Yep,
with
based on the one that we land on.
Yep.
Yeah. Here we go. I'm going to roll. It was a terrible roll, but it's number 1. Which is sequels.
Oh, perfect.
Bad sequels.
Ooh. I'm going to hit the pause again and we're going to sit down and come up with a top 5 list.
After much deliberation and 5 to 10 minutes of blood and sweat and tears, we have determined our top 5.
Yes. Top 5 bad movie sequels.
Bad movie sequels. So I rolled. So why don't you kick it off, Kenny?
Okay. This one we're going to have, I'm sure we'll have a little bit of contention with. I don't know. I can't remember what you think about this, but, and I love the other two a whole bunch, but The Matrix 3,
let me interrupt you for a second. Cause I made a list of 5, but I didn't put them in order.
Yeah.
And I think these all kind of like float around in really close. You know,
yeah, that's how I do it. I write a list.
Yeah.
And then I go, okay, which ones are the ones that I want to.
But I also have Matrix 3.
So oh, you do.
Go on. Yeah. Yeah.
Right on. Perfect. So that's your number 5 too.
Yeah.
So, it seemed like there was a lot of trying to live up to what the movie should have been and what the story should have been. And, yeah. and then like, maybe their heart wasn't even in it.
Almost like, so it became a trilogy, not from intention.
Yeah.
But from, it just evolved into a trilogy.
Yeah. And they were just trying to like,
and tell. They didn't have nearly as much, cause they put a gigantic amount of time into the first Matrix.
Yeah.
You know, and you can tell like the way, like how matured and how well done the story concept is.
Yeah. And the beats of the story and the way it and the way it's presented. Yeah.
They didn't put that level of work into two or three, in my opinion.
Yeah.
My issue is that the coolest turn and would have brought it into a whole another level of pulling it back into what made the Matrix movies really awesome, is that we discover that they never did actually get out.
Yeah.
Morpheus and Nebuchadnezzar, woke Neo still isn't woke kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah. You know, no, I actually think that's an interesting thing.
They just got to level two of the Matrix, is where you get to pretend that you're out of the Matrix.
Yeah. I think what that is, the neat
thing would have been more interesting to me than what they did.
Yeah. I think, that would have been super interesting to me also. And then, in going into that, no matter like that ancient like storytelling trope that humans will always try.
Yeah.
If they're in a cage, they're going to try to get out.
Right.
And so if they thought they've got out of the cage, maybe they'll stop trying to
exactly.
get out.
Exactly. That.
I think that, and maybe that was their intention and they wanted to do that. And cause it seemed like that's the way they were building.
It really felt like that to me, where I was kind of anticipating that, especially when Neo, Neo out of the Matrix
had powers
that was like, oh shit, we're still in.
Yeah
that's the only way.
And I think maybe they were trying to, and then they got told they couldn't do that. Yeah. And they just said, all right, we'll just give you the bullshit. And then,
they went with the Agent Smith virus kind of thing.
Yeah. So that, I think that's kind of interesting. So since that was your number five, I guess I'll go to my number four.
Cool.
Let's see if this movie is on your list. Batman and Robin.
Wow.
Is that on your list too?
Absolutely it is.
Let's see if we can go all the way up.
Yes. I mean, this is that one that's kind of like, come on, you know why. But a big reason I think was because of the front loading on characters mm-hmm. that the audience wasn't familiar with and we hadn't established these versions of.
Yeah.
That I think has informed and fixed superhero movies with every single one since Batman and Robin.
Yeah, I think, we wouldn't have good ones if it wasn't for that bad one.
I think
one.
DC still makes the mistake like they did in the, in Justice League with not having of the characters all front. Like when you do the solo movie before you do the group movie mm-hmm. and you do enough of those so that who you're introducing in the movie is a smaller number, you look at Justice League and how much legwork you have to do introducing these characters, and especially these versions of these characters.
Yeah.
And then you look at what they did with Avengers Infinity War.
That's true.
The only person they had to introduce in Infinity War was Thanos.
Yeah.
And we already had a number of teases with Thanos.
Yeah, and they did front
load. So we wanted to know who Thanos mm-hmm. was still. But that was because that's the character you learn about in Infinity War. Yeah. You don't learn about anybody else. It's all about
his story.
Thanos's story, his journey. And that's one of the things that I think really makes it way more interesting of a movie.
And then the sequel to that, it's the hero's journey again, basically, with all the main characters.
Yeah.
And figuring out how to be themselves again.
Especially with something that's really hard to do, especially in these kinds of superhero movies and in movies in general these days, is having that bad ending.
Yeah.
And then having to pick yourself up from a real hard, bad ending.
What happens when you fail?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why people love Empire Strikes Back so much.
Yeah.
It's because it ends so rough.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so that's number four.
So I don't know. I don't know if you'll have this
Keep
one.
Keep it going, Kenny.
This one's it's not me trying to guess Levi's favorite bad movies. So my number three is Terminator Genesis.
Nice, nice. I did not put any Terminators on my list.
Genesis is the worst one, I think, in my opinion. Some of the other ones are bad.
Which one is that? Is that the one with the nanites?
Yes.
Okay, and that's where John Connor turns out to be evil?
Yes.
Okay, okay. Yeah, that one was that had a lot of potential.
It did.
You know, the one thing I think that one did reveal, which I totally bought into, was the idea of like the Terminator timeline is so tangled yarn.
Yeah.
You know, which really gives it the permission of you can do however many
of these movies as you want.
As long as they continue to build off of 1 and 2, you know, where you extrapolate from that.
Yeah.
To go anywhere.
I mean,
because a lot of these to me have been like, it felt like, reattempts at part 3.
Yeah.
You know,
that's exactly what it is. Look, I like the Terminator series and I like the idea of that movie.
Yeah.
And I don't even mind the nanites and then that John Connor's bad and, right. and all that. It's just, I think technically that movie wasn't presented very well.
Okay.
And I saw the story coming from like I saw that story coming a mile away.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
10 minutes into that movie, yeah. I was like, no, that's what this movie is. It's terrible. I was like, he's the bad guy. I get it. It's obvious. Right. He's a Terminator. They replaced him or they sent him back or something like that. And I was like, I get this. I got it right away. And there's other movies where I like The Outsiders is probably the best example of that. As I was in the movie theater and 5 minutes in that movie, I was like, holy shit.
Right.
And I got the movie and then it was just so well done. I was like, no, that's not what's happening.
Yeah.
And then I got it and I nailed it. And then I convinced myself within a couple of minutes that that's not what's going on.
Right.
And then at the end I got fucking broadsided.
And that, you know, you're touching on to how well people can present, you know, on that 15 minute rule with movies.
Yeah.
You know, the first 15 minutes, you really have to establish your entire movie in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've got to show if there's a villain, you've got to see the villain, even if it's a secret villain, that villain still has to be there.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you got to show the rifle over the mantle kind of thing, the whatever weapon, you know, that you're going to use at the end, you know, to defeat the whatever.
It has to be there.
The MacGuffin everything has to be established in the first 15 minutes.
And all
the pieces have to be on the board.
Yeah. So I don't think they did that in that movie.
And how well you do that does a lot for the rest of the movie. Yeah.
I don't think they did any of that. It's just, I don't think I think what problem is, that movie technically broke down and they probably had a lot of interference with too many hands in the soup.
Well, imagine how many interests are involved in a Terminator movie nowadays.
You know,
there's so much weight behind that franchise, even though it's a flaming pile of dog shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that movie just was terrible.
I heard that, what's his name? Who did the first two?
James Cameron
was going to come back to do another one. Yeah. I think
they're going to Highlander 2.
I think that's this new one where, and Schwarzenegger is going to be in it again and he's going to be a villainous character instead of ever since 2, it's been flipped that, oh no, the villain you thought, I mean, he's been a good Terminator for longer than he's been an evil one.
Yeah. No, I think they're going to,
and him as an evil one. The first Terminator is still, I mean, that was a sci-fi horror movie.
It was a classic and it was amazing. All right. So what's your number 3, sir? Since I didn't get that one.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So I'm going to go into, I would say, Crow 2, City of Angels.
I did not put that on my list because I have not seen that movie because I don't believe that movie exists. It's a complete fabrication.
Never watched any of the Crow movies after the first one?
Nope. I believe that Crow 2 is a fabrication.
I watched it and the third one mostly on the caveat that they're different. They're different stories.
Okay.
They're different characters.
Yeah.
And the second one was like also, I guess, to try to like capture a similar kind of moxie to a flavor to it, that it's another director that had directed like short form stuff, music videos, stuff like versus like a feature length movie to make a movie. Cause that's the first Crow was, you know, the director was a music video director.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have a lot of experience with movies, which led to a lot of the tragedies, but, Yeah, but it was, you know, that's such a singular story, you know. Yeah,
that's there that doesn't need to be sequels. That
follows it is like an affront. On,
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So that you know, just on simple fact, I mean, and it's not a great movie.
I don't.
Yeah.
The
way that it tries to connect to the first one, and, you know, is weak and lame, you know, and it's just bad.
Okay. All right. So my number two is Indiana Jones 4.
Nice. Okay. That's the Crystal Skull one.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay, obviously.
Yeah. You're going to be like, I hate Temple of Doom.
No. Indiana Jones 4. Yeah. The Crystal Skull. Yeah. I like some bits of it. And yeah. I think that was one of the first movies that was trying when they first started doing these like relaunch, remake, but continue the old movies. I think that was the first one that they did. Yeah. And it wasn't very good.
Why? The desire is, I think, still really strong for a continuation of Indiana Jones.
I think they're making another one.
That, yeah. And to do like a young Indiana Jones with River Phoenix back in the day.
I watched that TV show. It was badass.
Yeah, it was. It was fantastic. And he could have easily have grown up into that role and done it for, you know, his whole life. And I think.
For sure.
Yeah. But then, you know, then we're going on into, okay, so Shia LaBeouf. You know, that's a weird fit.
Like he was,
and it's a character contrast is what it is. The manic anxiety of Shia LaBeouf. Mm-hmm.
I think what it was is that he was extremely popular at the time.
Yeah.
Like he was a huge star at the time of that movie.
And I mean, so Sean Connery's use was kind of similar in that motivation.
That's true.
It's just that Sean Connery brought a contrast that made badass Indiana Jones look like a rookie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was cool.
It was.
You know,
it was
that, very and, cool. And that built up, you know, like, holy shit, this is Indiana Jones's dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so that movement in generation is culturally obviously like, oh, yeah, of course, you know, your dad's way more capable. You know,
yeah,
and tougher and resilient.
It just made you feel like a father.
You feel like a kid. Yeah.
And it was really cool.
And Shia LaBeouf performs the same function in the other direction of like, oh, this shit kid weirdo.
Yeah.
Fuck. You know?
Yeah. Sorry, but he didn't do a very good job.
Yeah. And it is irritating, but too irritating.
Yeah.
Irritating in a way that is almost like irredeemably.
Yeah. I really liked everything else about that movie. And I think he really just stunk it up and it made me not like that movie as much. Yeah,
I think that's fair.
Cool. So what's your number two?
My number two is Star Wars 2. And that would be Attack of the Clones to clarify. Okay.
Okay. I would probably say that would be on my list, but my problem
beyond Star Wars 1, which
Phantom Menace,
which really felt weird for me to call out as a
sequel?
Hated sequel, even though technically.
Yeah, no, I get it. And that's fine.
But Attack of the Clones for me was. It's still the hardest one to get through. I mean, there's a lot of important story, I think, you know, and relevant stuff that happens to everything. But at the same time, it's just like fucking.
It's
rough, man. It's a trod.
And I get it. And I understand that.
Yeah.
I am such a dork and huge Star Wars fan.
Well, and you're a Clones fan, too.
I'm a fan of the Clones fan because of the animated show.
For sure. Yeah.
And completely.
And that all derives off of, that's the episode, that's the movie that all of that splinters from.
Yeah. And I was okay with it when it came out.
Yeah.
I was like, I get it. And they made, it was kind of one of those movies. It was kind of like the Fantastic Four sequel, which you're like, the first movie was so bad.
Yeah.
And then the sequel just tried to fix everything.
I wanted to put Fantastic Four 2 on this list, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
Because I like it. Because Silver Surfer. That Silver Surfer was
awesome. Yeah, they're fixing all the problems.
Yeah.
And I think what they had to do with that movie is...
It amazes me that...
That they were like, all right, we're going to address... What they should have done is dropped all the shit from the first movie and just fixed everything.
Yeah.
And then... But what they tried to do was fix it through story and make everything better.
I think, and if I'd have been at all involved in the production staff of Fantastic Four 2... is seeing all of the workups for Silver Surfer, I would have scrapped the whole Fantastic Four
part of the movie.
Yeah, Chip Lawrence Fishburne and Doug Jones and and just went, no, we're just doing a Silver Surfer movie.
Yeah. what was the movie we started? Oh yeah, it was Attack of the Clones.
Spider-Man 2. Or Superman 2.
No, Star Wars 2.
Oh my god.
I was okay with the movie when it first came out. I watched it and I was like, okay, they're trying to make this movie better.
Yeah.
They're trying to make the Star Wars, they listened to the fans and changed it in positive ways.
Right.
And then years later I watched the Clone Wars and fell in love with it. And then after watching and that series being over, going back and watching Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
And then kind of just coming to it with a whole nother set of eyes or maybe an older set of eyes. Yeah. I ended up falling in love with those movies. I actually like them.
Yeah. I'm not, and I do think that 2 is, less interesting to me than Phantom Menace. I think Attack of the Clones is less interesting to me than Phantom Menace.
Oh yeah.
And my favorite of the prequels is,
the third one?
Yeah, the third one.
Mine too.
Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't hate those movies, but I mean, it is, you know, that run of you know, the Star Wars prequels really were the thing that, like, with all, like, the nerd rage that goes on these days, I really had a lot of that for those movies.
Me too. Yeah. Me too.
Not what I was anticipating
at all. I came back to them with a better understanding years later, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's the, the view of the sequel trilogy.
Yeah.
Right. And then compared to the prequel trilogy.
that reminds me of that video. I can't remember who did it or the creator, but somebody was like, he did it. He's like, welcome to my TED talk. All Star Wars movies are named incorrectly. And he renames all the Star Wars movies using the original names.
Yeah.
And like reorders the way they,
but attaching them to the logic of the movie itself.
Yeah. And yeah, I was like,
it was fantastic.
It was it's fantastic.
Yeah. I think in a lot of ways I've seen that. And, I've seen the chart. Somebody made a chart on it.
Somebody made a video and and I think I don't know. I know. I think I've showed it to
perfect.
You.
It's perfect. It actually improves the movies.
It does. Doesn't it?
Yeah, totally.
It does.
All right. So what's your number one, man?
My number one is, I kind of dropped it earlier, is Highlander 2.
Nice. Good choice. Good choice.
I'm an absolute, and I'm one of those. It's like it kind of reminds me of Stargate, my Highlander love, because I love the TV show. Yeah. I watched that show when I was a kid.
I'm never a big fan of the TV show.
I watched the shit out of
that
show.
That first movie 100 times before I was 12.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
First movie's great. The third movie is okay.
My cousin had it on VHS. And,
yeah, the first movie's great. The third movie's okay. The fourth one's I don't think it didn't need sequels. That's one of those movies that did not need sequels.
No, it really didn't, but it left. But the temptation, I think, was too much, because that movie is one of those movies that really, the first one really leaves you with just this open book of possibility.
Yeah.
Well, but you can spend all day thinking about that movie and after the movie ends.
Yeah.
Once you watch that movie, I mean, I did. It was just, it triggered the imagination to a like untold level.
It's amazing. And and I think the TV show capitalizes on that story more than any of the sequels.
I definitely think that that's fair. And I maybe watched like a couple of random episodes.
Yeah.
Never really got into the show itself.
That's one of those shows that the first season is garbage.
Yeah.
And then when they said, okay, you're probably going to get canceled after the second season, just do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And they changed the showrunner, and he came in and he just like he laser focused that and created stories and added characters.
So weird though.
The movie's terrible.
I appreciate how weird it is.
It is very strange.
It would be a much better movie if it wasn't a sequel to Highlander.
Yeah. It's, it reminds me of,
it's a very Dune-esque Blade Runner kind of sci-fi thing.
It's, it would be a cool movie if it wasn't for, that they tried to shoehorn it into a sequel.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like, what's that fucking,
they could have even have just
that
aped over the Highlander-ish part.
Yeah.
And then, but focused on, okay, this is where these immortals that get imprisoned to Earth.
Yeah.
You know, the Zeebs.
The Zeebs.
Yeah.
No, it's cool. And it kind of reminds me of that Clive Owen movie, the Knights of the Round Table or the King Arthur.
Okay.
If you look at that movie and watch it, it's fucking absolutely fantastic. Yeah. The only thing you have to do is understand that it's not a
not a King Arthur story.
Yeah. If you ignore that it's a King Arthur story and then just watch that movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Hell yeah.
And I just realized talking about it is that's where fucking Skarsgård's from. The father, the older Skarsgård, not the one who played it. The one, he was in Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. He was the crazy guy. He was the son that ran the company.
I haven't seen that movie.
You haven't seen The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo? Really good. Yeah. But yeah, he plays a couple other movies. I'm trying to think. He's been in a ton of stuff, but he's Baron Harkonnen in the new Dune movie, and he fucking destroys.
Yeah.
He's a great actor.
There's a lot of Skarsgård out there.
Yeah, he has two sons, and he's the father, and he has his two sons, and I can't believe he's in that movie. I didn't realize it until just now. What's your number one?
Yeah, so my number one is the Sam Raimi Spider-Man 3.
That is a terrible sequel, and I can't believe I didn't put that on here. Maybe it's because...
And it's definitely my top one.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of obvious problems for anybody that's seen that movie.
Well, I think what I do and what... reason I don't think of that as a terrible sequel is because I absolutely ignore all the Venom parts
for sure. Yeah. And that's a major part. Like there's a good movie in there.
Yeah.
And that's part of what upsets me so much about that movie. The Sandman stuff was awesome.
That's a solid, solid
absolutely
point.
Awesome. And if you just did that as a Sandman movie and had the foundational buildup for Venom,
it would have been an amazing movie.
So you could have done Spider-Man in the black costume.
Yeah.
The whole movie. And even slowed down a little bit of the douchebagginess of Peter Parker as he gets tainted by the symbiote. You could have slowed that down because you wouldn't have to have the turn and Venom in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, so at the end of the movie, after the Sandman stuff, then you have Spider-Man get rid of the costume.
Yeah, you can even have the Eddie Brock stuff,
Eddie Brock can be in the movie, but not with the symbiote.
Yeah.
And then the movie ends with Parker getting rid of it, Eddie Brock getting it. And then the fourth movie would have been all out Venom for sure.
And it would have been a much better, both of those movies would have been really good.
Yeah. I think that would have altered the course of superhero movies.
And I think they should have, and they also
that point because of how much changed from how much that movie bombed out.
Yeah. That's another one of those movies that people were like, okay,
Spider-Man 2 is awesome. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Doc Ock was incredible.
And, they should have kept ignoring the Green Goblin character instead of trying to stick him in that movie. They're like, we gotta deal with this character too. Just ignore him until the fifth movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then bring him back.
Yeah. And if you want to build the Sinister Six, that's fine. But let's do this right. Let's slow this down.
That's exactly it. It had such great potential, but ended up being such a terrible movie.
Yeah. And it's so obvious, at least to me, how that movie could have been better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Right on. Well, I guess that's the end of the first episode of the second season. Thank you guys for joining us.
We did it. We didn't even mean to.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. And if you'd like to see any and all things, it's been a while since I've done this. Sorry. So thanks for joining us. And if you would like to see any and all things Mop and Bucket, please head on over to the website, mopandbucket.net, where by the time you're hearing this, the new poster, Golden Child, will be available on the website.
Yeah.
And if you would like to copy of the of that, you can order it on the website or you can come into the studio.
And if you're one of our patrons, you would be aware of other projects and products that we've been finishing up and starting.
Yeah.
And so if you want to be even more in the know, get on the Patreon.
Yeah, Patreon. It's still just $1 a month.
Yep. And Mop and Bucket Press.
.net. Or
yeah, patreon.com/moppingbucketpress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, and if you do help us support us on Patreon, it really does make things like this podcast and then getting posters and things like that. Makes that all possible.
Makes a big difference. Yeah.
Makes it all possible for us. So again, thank you for joining us.
And we'll catch you later.